Parshat Kedoshim begins, Vaydaber Hashem el Moshe lemar, daber el kol adat b'nei Yisrael v'amartelem kedoshim to you, ki kadosh ani Hashem alakechem. Over here, instead of the normal, and God spoke to Moshe saying, over here we have an additional comment. The additional comment is speak to the entire congregation of Israel. The speaking to the entire congregation is understood that over here it's going to be not just an individual communication, but rather a communication which includes the entire congregation, the entire people. And therefore, there's an immediate, shall we say, comparison with the revelation that took place at Sinai when the entire people were standing there. Everybody is gathered together. It's not just that everybody is here. Instead of the normative, God said to Moshe, speak to the children, where Moshe is the conduit. It's not just that. It's that when you look at the content over the next couple of verses, something becomes immediately evident, and that is that the content is very evocative of the Ten Commandments as well. So it's not just gather the people and therefore you see the Ten Commandments. It's that you look and you see the Ten Commandments. In the very next verse, Ishimova Vivti Rova Ed Shapto Taitishmoa Ni Hashem, where it speaks about reverence of parents and guarding the Sabbath, and perhaps even Ani Hashem, you have either two or three of the Ten Commandments thrown into one verse right over there. And then as one continues and one looks well enough, one can in fact find more of those commandments. Now, here's where I want to be a little careful. You know, even though I said that, you take a look at it's there, and I think that that's quite obvious. The question is, where are they precisely? So if anybody wants some homework to do, you are certainly invited to go and to open up the rest of the chapter and to go one by one and try to compare. I mean, if you look right after source number 5, I actually left for you over there a list of the Aseret HaDibrot, a list of the Ten Commandments. And I did that myself, to going searching through. And when you do that, you'll actually find that arguably there's one of the commandments which is missing. Now, the one which is missing is probably, when you look at it, you're not going to notice it initially. So as I said, if we go back to Pasuk Bet itself, you have maybe two or three of the commandments. Why do I say two or three of the commandments? Because you have Shabbat, you have honoring parents, and you have Ani Hashem Elokeichem. Now that Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am God, or Ani Hashem, if you'll notice it, I bolded it in the first source, and you find that kind of signature, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, in Pasuk Bet, and again in Pasuk Gimel, and then again in Pasuk Dalet. I mean, it's right there again and again. Al Tifnu Elilim V'Lei Maseich Lo Tasechem, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, which means that Ani Hashem becomes the signature, and it continues through sometimes Ani Hashem Elokeichem, and sometimes Ani Hashem, continuing in Pasuk Yud Bet, in Pasuk Yud Dalet, and again in Pasuk Ted Zayin, and finally in Pasuk Yudchet. In all of those you have this Ani Hashem. The other things which are here are concerns with Avodah Zarah, which, as you know, is at least one of the commandments. And on top of that, as I said, the rest of them seem to fit in more or less, and how you fit them is not necessarily universally agreed upon. But the one which is missing is the one that you probably would not have guessed, and it's for a very simple reason. It's because it's here, but it's not here. Look at Rashi in source number 2. Kedoshim to you, that you should be holy. So Rashi writes, Havi purushim min ha'arayot min avera. Separate yourself from the arayot. So over here, the arayot would be, of the Ten Commandments, would be lo tin'af, not to commit adultery, and so on. Now, the problem is that when I look through this whole list over here, that's the one which is missing. Lo tin'af is not here. Of course, the question is going to be, how broadly should I stretch the canvas? Now, if I look immediately before this section, if I go back to the end of last week's parsha, I have a whole list of arayot, a whole list of forbidden relations. Now, that could be a very easy solution. Oh, look, they're all there. The difficulty of that solution is, but it's not part of this speech, where God says to Moshe, speak to the entire children of Israel, which means for some reason that got excluded. Why it got excluded, that I'm going to leave for right now. Rashi does point out, let's continue the Rashi in source 2, that Rashi over here is defining holiness as the separation from immorality, sexual immorality. Then he quotes a verse, Isha zona v'chola, ani Hashem mekadishchem, and he quotes a verse down the line in chapter 21, which is a little bit separate from this area right here. V'lo yichalel zar'o, ani Hashem mekadisho. So you see in both of these cases, the word holiness connected with sexual, shall we say, a lack of immorality. Kedoshim yu, isha zona v'chalela. Now, of course, all of those examples are, as I said, much later on. The Midrash, in source number 3, the Tanchuma, does not, again, he's not looking for the connection with holiness per se, which is why he doesn't go. That's what he is looking for, is specifically the Ten Commandments. The Berakol Adat B'nei Yisrael, V'amarta Aleihem Kedoshim Tiyu, Mara Aloma HaParsha Hazot B'kinus. Why is this particular parsha being stated when we're gathering everyone together? In exactly the way that I phrased the question before. Why doesn't it just say that God, that the Moshe should speak to the people, as in all other sections? Ella el kol adat b'nei Yisrael. Why the entire community? Lefi shekol hadibrot klulimba. Because all of the commandments are included over here. Now, there's two ways to understand that. One is all the commandments, all 613 commandments are somehow here. If you want to go in that direction, you can say, V'haftarecha kamocha, zekal go debut Torah, it's right over here, so everything is subsumed within it. On the other hand, it seems to be that that's not what the Midrash means. It seems to be that the Midrash is specifically connecting it to the Ten Commandments. It's all the commandments it means in terms of the Ten that we're familiar with. Ketzad, b'dibrot k'tiv, see, shakol hadibrot kulimba. All of the dibrot, as we know, the aseret dibrot, are over here. Keitza bidibrot k'tiv, anoche Hashem lokecha, v'kan k'tiv, ani Hashem lokechem. So therefore, this connection between ani Hashem, ani Hashem, anochi, ani Hashem, so it sees that as black and white. Bidibrot k'tiv lo yelacha, v'kan al tifnu, al ilim. Okay, the rejection of idolatry. Bidibrot k'tiv lo tisa, v'k'tiv kan lo tisa. Tishba'u bishmi l'shaker, in terms of false witness. B'dibrok tiv shmorat yom ha-shabbat, v'ketan tiv is chepto tai tishmaru, which, by the way, did not use the one which was immediately, because this one, it felt, was closer to the dibur. B'dibrok tiv kaveret avich v'atimech, v'kan tiv ishim ova v'vtirau. B'dibrok tiv lo tirtzach, v'kan tiv lo tamor odam reyacha. Right, not to murder, don't stand in your brother's blood. B'dibrok tiv lo tin'af, that's the one we're looking for. V'kan mot yumat hano'ef v'hano'afet, which actually pushed it a little bit further than where everything else will be, which basically means instead of the whole first section of Perek Yud Tet, and as you see in Source 1, I have one organic section over here until there's a ticha, there's a pay over there at the end. So here it pushes it off into the next section. Bidroktiv lo tignov, v'kam lo tignovu, it really should be. Bidroktiv lo ta'aneh, v'kan k'tiv lo telech rachil. Bidroktiv lo tachmod, v'kan lo tasok et reacha v'lo tigzol. Harei kol aseret hadibrot kulim b'torah, l'kach k'tiv el kol adat. So over here, again, the Midrash is understanding something which, as I said, it's the kind of thing that anybody who was a little sensitive should have felt it by themselves. You could have looked it by yourselves. And if you looked it by yourselves, I'm going to say this again, you would not have necessarily gotten to the same conclusion that this Midrash drew. A matter of fact, you can do something else if you want. You can take the Aseret HaDibrot, line them up, and then you can go through each and every verse and say which one does it fit in to most closely, and what you'll find is that you can fit them all, I think arguably all of them, into the ten. But again, Lo Tinaf is not immediately here. That's the one which was furthest down the line. The others seem to be right here. And that itself, as I said, is curious. Lo Tachmod, I would have connected with V'haftarecha Kamocha. And there are midrashim which make that connection. I think that would have been a much easier thing. That's what I said. That if you go and try to do the work yourself, you'll find. What about it?
Oh, that's here.
Ishimova v'vtirao. It's right away. Right. It's not exactly the same. They're not exactly the same. But I do want to point out something which, after I say it, will be very obvious. It could be before I say it, it won't be as obvious. But afterwards, I knew that. That's obvious. And that is, why at this particular section is this being repeated? Why at this particular time is this being repeated? Which means, why here? Why now? What's the context? This is a repetition of Sereta Dibrot. Why? I mean, later on, 40 years later, a new generation, before Moshe takes leave of the people, we have a restatement of the Sereta Dibrot. And there, I won't say it's exact, but it's much closer to the original Aserita Dibrot. You can argue that the ones in Dvarim are with a little bit of Torah Shebaal Peh. You can also argue that one may be reflected the first time the Aserita Dibrot was given, the other given the second time that they were given, right? I mean, what exactly was written on the first, second? Were they identical? Again, the various commentaries will give various solutions to why they're not identical, but that's not my concern. The fact again remains that the content of what we study over here in this week's parsha in Kedoshim, the content bears striking similarity to the Aserita Dibrot. I'm not looking for an exact reformation, I'm looking for the similarity. So then it leads me to this other question. I already have the Aserita Dibrot. Why not just say, take a look what it says over here and say for Shemot? Meaning, why is it necessary over here? Which then leads me to, as I said, contextually a very obvious conclusion. And that is, when I look in last week's parasha, which I don't know when we read that, when I look in Achrimot creates a context which is important. The context is entering the land of Israel. When you enter into the land of Israel will not tolerate certain type of behavior. The land of Israel is a sensitive land. It has a very sensitive constitution. I mean, not that we have a constitution. It says it will vomit out that which it finds to be inappropriate. And quite the opposite. You have to say that everybody who's here right now is a tzaddik. Otherwise, the land would have vomited them out. So he's in the process of being regurgitated. Reading those words then leads us to, as I said, the conclusion, which is very obvious, which of course we don't think about. And that is, once again, when we left Egypt, we were supposed to get to Mount Sinai. When we get to Mount Sinai, things actually went much slower than they were supposed to. But when we leave Mount Sinai, the next place we were supposed to go to was directly into the land of Israel. Which means we keep looking at the Torah as terms of a five-book work, without realizing sometimes that two of those five books were just not supposed to be there. Which means we're supposed to leave Mount Sinai and go directly to the land of Israel. So over here we're getting those final instructions in order to go to the land of Israel and get rid of Sefer Devarim, which is 40 years later, which wasn't supposed to be there, and get rid of Sefer Bamidbar, because again, that's where the whole situation deteriorates. But over here, in a still Vayikra concept, we left Egypt. We got the Torah, we build the Mishkan, again, whether that was necessary or not is part of another discussion, and now they're poised to go straight to the land of Israel. So now we need to know the rules of how the land of Israel works, and over here, within that context, we get this restatement of the Ten Commandments. And here now I want to stress something. When I look in last week's parasha, it's actually that, as I said, what's missing over here? What's missing is Lo Tinaf. What's missing is this not to commit adultery. When I look at last week's portion, again, when I look at Achrimot, and I have this whole section, and the section there begins, don't follow the practices of Egypt. Don't follow the practice of the Canaanites. This is why God is getting rid of these people. The land is vomiting them out. Don't do what they do. And that is the whole introduction to the whole section of immoral or illicit sexual relations, which means that's the larger discussion. So as I said, when it's missing over here, it's not that Lo Tinaf is missing, as much as that got the full treatment. And now, okay, actually there's another nine commandments that I still need to mention. And over here it's mentioned the other nine. Although, as I said, after this immediate section, we'll again get this whole section of the arayot, of illicit relations, which actually sandwich the beginning of Parsha Kedoshim. What comes before it is a statement of illicit relations. What comes after it is the punishment of those illicit relations. And over here, right in between, we find, at least, as I said, nine of the commandments, which means sometimes you can end up confusing yourself when you look at something, you know, too focused. And as I said, you know, you make your canvas too small. And then you say, oh, something's missing over here. Yeah, something is missing over here. If I call this section a restatement of the Ten Commandments, one commandment is missing. The commandment is there, though, if I look before and I look after, but it's more than that. Noticing it before and noticing it after actually then sets the whole tone for what's going on over here. Now, again, I want to be very clear on what that tone is. That tone is these people. I mean, can you look back if there's a chumash over there? There should be. These people, namely the Canaanites, are not deserving to stay in the land of Israel. Do not follow their practices. You need to create a different type of morality. When you create this different type of morality, you will then be able to stay in the land. And then we see, which is either something which should be as a surprise or perhaps not a surprise, that the major focus is a focus on sexuality. I mean, you need to build something better. You need to do better than that. But I'm reading now from the beginning of chapter 18 of Yudchet. Vayedaber Hashem Moshe le'mor, deber b'nei Yisrael, amar t'lehem, ani Hashem Elokeichem, which again is very similar to what we have over here. Ki ma'aseh eretz Mitzrayim asher yeshavtem bo lo ta'asu. Don't follow the practices of Egypt where you were. Ukamaseh eretz Kanaan asher nevi etchem, and the land of Canaan that I'm bringing you to, Shama, lo ta'asu, don't follow their ways. Uvechuktehem lo t'lechu, don't follow their practices as a general statement. Et mishpatai ta'asu, vet chukotai tishmeru l'lechet behem. Right, follow my statutes, my teachings. Ushmartim et chukotai mishpatai asher yaseh otam adam v'chai behem ani Hashem. Then you're going to live. That then leads into ish el she'er, all of the illicit relations. The section then is signed off as follows. It goes to the last couple of problematic things, including bestiality. And then it signs off, and it says in Pasuk of Dalet, Al titma'u b'kol eile. Do we have these for you over here? Yeah, this was in source 8, what I just now read. And now look at source number 9. Al titma'u b'kol eile. Do not defile yourself with all of these. Ki b'kol eile nitma'u ha'goyim asher nimashaleich b'pneichem. This is the way that the people are being exiled from here. This is how they defiled themselves. V'titmaha aretz, v'efkod avuna alea, v'takia aretz et yoshveha. These people acted in this way. They defiled the land, and the land is vomiting them out. U'shmartem atem et chukotai v'et mishpotai v'lo tasu mikol otoy va'aleh, and follow my laws and don't do the behaviors that they do. V'ha'izrach v'ger gaber tochem, and also the strangers in your midst. These people did all these things. The land was defiled. The land should not defile you. Right, by defiling. Again, it keeps on repeating itself again and again and again. That it should be quite clear. Whoever does this, their souls be wiped out. Mishmarti, follow my statutes, my laws. Levilti asot michukot ha-to'eva asher nasu lefneichem v'lo titmu ani Hashem Elokeichem. Don't become defiled. Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am Lord your God. What's the next verse? Beginning of our parsha, Kedoshim Tiyu, and then it flows into Kedoshim. So as I said, the larger context over here is very, very clear to me. What is it? It's entering the land of Israel. What happens when entering the land of Israel? We need to do better. If we don't do better, the land will just not tolerate this. So as I said, this should be very, very clear that the restatement of the Ten Commandments coming over here is coming specifically within the context when you go into the land, you need to create a pure society. Now, there's a second observation by the way, the end of Parshat Kedoshim, take a look at source 10. Here, as I said, it then flows back into the whole discussion of illicit relations. And how does it sign off that section? Pasuk Kaf Bet. Ushmartim et kol chukotai v'et kol mishpatai v'asitim otam v'lo toki etchem ha'aretz asher ani mevi etchem shama l'shevet ba. The exact same verses there again. Follow my laws and don't have the land vomit you out. V'lo techu b'cholko tagoi. Don't follow their practices. Asher ni mishalach mipneyu, ki et kol eila asu ve'akot bam. Because all of this, God is saying that, again, is why I've kicked them out. V'omer lachem atem tirshuot admatam, v'ani etenena lachem l'reshet ota eretz var chalav u'dvash. Ani Hashem alokeichem, asher hivdalti etchem min amin, hivdalti min abahima, and so on. V'yitim li kedoshim ki kedosh ani, v'abdil etchem, and so on. So it signs off going right back to this idea of holiness. So again, as I said, I think I'm just stating the obvious right now. The larger context is entering the land of Israel. Entering the land of Israel demands that we do better. The previous nations that were here are being exiled due to their inappropriate behavior. The largest focus on the inappropriate behavior is actually on sexual sins. Again, if you want to add something else, you can add idolatry for good measure as well. Idolatry makes idolatry. You know what I'm saying? Idolatry makes a nice appearance over here as well. Those seems to be the main types of behaviors, and the land just simply will not tolerate it. Which leads me to a second point. So, what exactly is it that the Torah expects of the non-Jews? Now, maybe this was not the obvious question that you would have thought of, but it says the non-Jews did not behave in a very proper way, and therefore they're being kicked out. Which, by the way, also sounds... You can look at this in one of two ways. Either they were supposed to behave in this way, and therefore they're being punished for not behaving in this way, or, second way, there was no expectations of them to behave in this way, but the land is extremely sensitive and therefore they can't live in this land. Was that clear, the two different ways that I said it? One is that it's a punishment because the expectations for them were higher, and the other is that nothing to do with expectations of them or laws or obligations, it's just that the land won't tolerate this, and this is somehow a metaphysical reality. The land of Israel cannot tolerate such behavior. And of course, whenever you have two possibilities, you always have a third possibility, which is both. Which then you realize that there's also a fourth possibility, which is neither. Okay. The issue of Sodom and Gomorrah is an interesting parallel. It actually serves as a parallel both for the Canaanites, but also for the Egyptians, because there are a number of times in the Torah that you're going to find parallels between the place of Sodom. Again, almost every time it's mentioned that area, and Egypt as well, which means it does create that what I would call double parallel. Now, when I ask the question, what was expected of the non-Jews? So the answer is something which I think a lot of us, at least, you know, have some familiarity with, and that's something which is called the seven Noahide laws. If you need a refresher on the seven Noahide laws, if you look at source number 6, this is a Gemara. The Gemara is in Sanhedrin. It says, Tanu Rabbanan, the rabbis taught, Sheva mitzvot nitztavu b'nei Noach. There are seven laws which were commanded to the Noahites. Dinim, which means creating a judiciary, a fair judiciary. Birkot Hashem, not to curse God. He uses a euphemism of blessing. Avodah Zarah, idolatry. Gilui Arayot, sexual sins. Shfichut Damim, murder. Gezel, the Eivrim in Hachai. And ripping off and eating the limb of a live animal. Now, when I look at this list and I compare it to this Eretz HaDibrot, you should notice immediately that there is a very strong correlation between the two. The one which is the exception is Eivrim in Hachai. And right there I can say that Eivrim in Hachai, ripping off a limb of a live animal, is something which is barbaric, and that the Torah chose not to include barbaric behavior in the Ten Commandments maybe tells you something more about the audience than it tells you about the one who's giving the laws of the year. On the other hand, once I include quote-unquote laws of kosher, now I realize that there was a good amount of Sefer Vayikra dealing with laws of kosher, including how to shech things, right? How to properly kill something before you eat. It was also dealt with, going all the way through in terms of korbanot and so on, going all the way through all the types of things which are eaten and things which are not eaten. So this barbaric behavior is not included. When I look at the others, as I said, again, you can just look at your list of the Ten Commandments and you realize, you know, Lo Tirtzech, Lo Tinov, Lo Tignov are all right there, obvious. And the things in terms of the court system cover some of the others. And then in terms of lack of idolatry, you have yet another one. And which one? Which that non-Jews are, yeah, non-Jews are not supposed to worship idolatry. So the question is to what extent Anochi is included or not included within those is more of an academic discussion. Which are the Aseret HaDibrot which are not included in the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach? So there's either two or three of them. If it's two, it's Shabbat and Kibbutz Av Aim. If it's three, then it's Shabbat, Kibbutz Av Aim, and Anochi. Okay? Now, what's interesting is that when we look at our restatement now of the Aseret HaDibrot, if we go back to source number one, by Deber Hashem Moshe Lemar, Deber called Lapinesor of Amartalem, Kedoshim Tiyu, you I want to be holy, which means I have immorality, To'eva, things that the land vomits out, and then I have holiness. Now Rashi told me that those are identical. Rashi told me that what? That doing something which we consider to be to'eva, or not doing that, that's what creates holiness. Again, that's the way that Rashi implied. There's a very famous Ramban, which half the rabbis in the shuls will quote the Ramban over here, that it's not just that. Rashi, the Ramban won't say it's that holiness applies to all kinds of behavior. But over here, if I'm going to be very, very technical, it says, be holy. So here's the question. Is be holy a conclusion of everything that we just now had, which sounds to be what Rashi is saying? Is it an introduction of what we're about to have, or is it an independent command? The Ramban would understand it as an independent command. Aside from the 613 commandments, there's also another commandment to be holy. The Ramban's famous statement is that you should not be what he calls a menuval b'rishut haTorah. He says that a person can keep every single law and still be disgusting. That on top of everything else, you need to be decent or even holy on top of the other 613 commandments. Rashi is telling me that what does holiness refer to? Separating from the arayot. Which is, of course, very interesting because Rashi seems to be telling me, so that is really the conclusion of the previous section. But when I read it, the Berakol Adapin Israel, Kedoshim to you. So Kedoshim seems to be more than the non-Jews did. But now it's real interesting. What is the starting point of Kedoshim? Ish imov aviv tiro ve'et shabtotai tishmor ani Hashem Elokeichem. What do you have in that one verse? You have the very things that the B'nai Noach are not commanded on. Now that's very interesting. What you do with that is another question. But what? But that's very interesting. Because right over here, we have the differentiation between what's expected of the Noachides versus this new nation. By the way, when were the Jewish people called Kedoshim? They were called it as the introduction to standing at Mount Sinai. Right? You will be for me a holy nation, right? A priest and so on. That means that a holy nation was the introduction to Aseret HaDibrot in Perek Yud Tet and Shmot. So it should not come, therefore, as a terrible surprise or incredible surprise for us to see that Kedoshim introduces the restatement of the Ten Commandments But I think it's so clear now, again, once we notice this, it's so clear that the expectations of the Seret HaDibrot is specifically focusing on the things which the non-Jews are not commanded on, which of course then takes us to the next point. Why exactly are these things Jew-specific? You don't like that term. Why are these things Jew-specific and not universal? Because again, for argument's sake, we'll look at all three, but not in the right order. We'll look at the order of the pasuk. Ishimo vavivti roved shabtei tishmaru. Many non-Jews have parents as well. Right. And by the way, the opposite is true. The Gemara insists how various non-Jews throughout history have honored their parents properly, even sometimes greater than Jews. So, of course, now you know the obvious answer to it, because they're not commanded. Anything you're not commanded to do is easier to do than something that becomes a commandment. Now you have to do it, so now it's harder to do. But it's very interesting, because had non-Jews also been commanded to respect their parents, honor, revere, and so on their parents, none of us would have said, okay, that makes sense as far as laws go. So that's interesting that that's not there. Shabbos, I can also make an argument why Shabbat should have been a universal thing. If included within the Ten Commandments, you can't do idolatry. You have to believe that there's one God, which, as I said, is a debatable point. If I have to believe in one God created heaven and earth, so then why should Shabbat not be included? Now, we know that not only is Shabbat not included, the Gemara goes so far as to say that a non-Jew who keeps Shabbat is doing some kind of a terrible thing. He's not supposed to keep Shabbat. So specifically over here, the Arni, the parents, Shabbat isn't here. And Anochi is the one that we could have argued the most. And again, I'm going to insist that this is part of the argument or the discussion. When it says that they are commanded in idolatry, what is included with that commandment? I mean, one of the mistakes that we make sometimes is that we think that the non-Jews have seven commandments and the Jews have 613 commandments. That's just not true. The fairer comparison should have been the seven commandments and the Aseret HaDibrot. But if I would say, the Jews just have Aseret HaDibrot, all of you know, what are you talking about? But if I look at these Aseret HaDibrot, each one of them is really categories, which means included in the category, for example, of adultery, is included of all the sexual sins, which then takes you, into the 20s. When you look at not to steal, again, there's more than two dozen laws involved in theft, which are included over here. So therefore, if I look at the seven commandments of Noah, they're not specific laws, they're rather also categories of law. So again, then I get to this point. So what's included in this prohibition against idolatry? Is it just all the various forms of idolatry, or does it also include the belief in one God? As I said, that itself is a question. But when I look at Anochi, the way that Anochi is formulated, it's formulated that I am a God who took you out of the land of Egypt. So that becomes actually the most particular Jewish experience out of all of them, especially now coming right, well, we probably still have some matzah in our system. So, as I said, when I read this verse, Ishimo Vivtirov, Ed Shabta Tishmor, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, and I see, as I said, either two or three of those commandments, which are the ones which are different from the non-Jews. So that's so interesting that that's what jumps out at us right away. So apparently, the non-Jews are not obligated when it comes to these particular laws, and when the Torah, again, just to follow the flow, over here, we have the non-Jews are being vomited out because of these really terrible practices, right? Don't follow their practices. Rather, we have this restatement, you need to be holy. When it focuses on the holiness, it seems to create a distinction between what's expected of the Jews versus what's expected of the non-Jews, which means it's not, what seems to be telling us here, it's not just that we can't do what they did, we need to create something new, something better, and something holy. And of course, again, if I had to have a quick analysis of the difference over here, the laws of Shabbat and of respecting parents both are causing me to look towards the past, as does the way that Anochi is formulated. It's a look towards the past, while the other commandments are dealing with the present situation. So it seems to be that when it comes to the non-Jews, there's a lack of requirement of historical perspective and consciousness, rather dealing with a real politic and something which is perhaps even a pragmatic situation in order to create some kind of a peace over here and not to have complete anarchy. but things that deal with more philosophical, as I said, perspective, that seems to be what's missing from the list when I compare the two lists. But as I said, again, you can't miss this. By the way, I keep saying you can't miss this. I haven't seen any commentary who pointed this out, so I guess everybody missed it. But you can't miss that these two, which are not in the Shev Mitzvah Noach, are the first two which are stated within Kedoshim. Now, having said everything that I just now said, I want to flip it around a little bit and point out some teachings which I think are going to come as a little bit of a surprise. I'm going to start, and again, what concerns me is why the non-Jews have been kicked out of the land, right? So we said because of their abhorrent behavior. So let's take a look first at the opinion of the Ibn Ezra. And the Ibn Ezra, just in case we think that, hold it, that I misunderstand him, he says it in a bunch of different places, and after we finish the places that Ibn Ezra says it, we're going to see where the Vilna Gaon goes even further. And maybe we'll see Ramban along the way as well. The Ibn Ezra in Source 11 says, Ken Ger Toshav, this is actually from Vayikra, Alkein ger toshav lo yochal tamei ba'aretz tehora. What's a ger toshav? A ger toshav is not a ger tzedek. A ger toshav is somebody who wants to live in the land of Israel and he accepts upon himself the seven mitzvot b'nei Noach. Right? There's a big discussion regarding the Muslims, if Muslims are considered to be accepting Shev Mitzvot b'nei Noach. The Rambam actually argued that they did. Rav Kook did as well, and that was part of the argument that he made why you were allowed to do the Het HaMechira, why you're allowed to sell the land to non-Jews during the year of Shemitah. And his position was is because there's perhaps a prohibition that you're not allowed lo techanem, you don't either give them a place in the land or don't try to make friends with them. But Rav Kook said no, they're considered to be a ger toshav. A ger toshav is a non-Jew who accepts upon themselves certain laws in Israel, including, obviously, the Shev Mitzvah B'nei Noach. So the Ibn Ezra is saying over here is this law is about a ger toshav regarding eating things which are... So listen to the words. Alkein ger toshav lo yachal tamei be'eretz tahara. A ger toshav is not allowed to eat non-kosher in this holy land. So he seems to be saying it's the land which... Because that's the condition that he's allowed to live in our midst. Again, this is the verse coming later on in this week's Parsha, saying that you need to be holy, but guess what? If you want non-Jews to live among you, or non-Jews want to live among you, they need to keep to the same standard. So the Ibn Ezra really seems to be saying that non-Jews have an obligation of keeping kosher if they want to live in the land of Israel. And as I said, just in case you think that was a mistake... Just 1 second. Just in case you think that was a mistake, look at the Ibn Ezra in source number 12. This is back in Shemot. Guess where it is? Perikav Pasachet, which is the Seret HaDibrot regarding Shabbat. Which says, you don't do any work, you and your... Who did it include in not doing work? Right? One of the people... Right? So it says, V'nei ein safek kimilat ata kolal kol mishu ben mitzvah. You... Who's the you? You or old Jews? When it says you, you includes your spouse and your son and your daughter and your mother, and you is old Jews. That's all b'nei mitzvah. Al kein tam bincha v'bitcha k'tanim shvita tan alecha. So when it says your children, it's talking about children who are below bar or bat mitzvah, who you have responsibility for. V'tachayav l'shamram sheli asu devar shu asur l'cha la'asoto. Also your male or female servant and your atachayav, shetishmuru v'lot tinichehu sheyavod la'acher. Now we'll skip a little bit. V'alzeat na yadur hager b'sha'arecha, shelo yaseh melacha b'shabbat uv'yom ha-kippurim, alkein nechtav b'shniyah hager, v'kacha ba'arayot. V'alzeat na yadur sheishmur arayot, v'kacha b'chilat adam. Ibn Ezra just now came and told us that the ger toshav living in your midst cannot do work on Shabbat, cannot do work on Yom Kippurim, and cannot be eating. At least over here, he limits it to blood. Again, just in case you think this was a mistake, he says it in the third place in Source 13, back in Shmot, Perek Yud Gimel. Mitzvat incha Shabbat is here al garcha asher b'sharecha. That's the condition that he can live within your midst. Shelo yaseh melacha lefanai b'shabbat v'kacha b'yom kippurim. Ki ken katuv v'kacha b'pesach shelo yachal chametz b'makom shehu reshuto. V'zeh tam b'chol gvulecha. So this non-Jew who lives in your midst can't do work on Shabbat or Yom Kippurim. Not only that, he can't eat chametz on Pesach. So he says you can't eat it. It says the Isser Achila. So obviously you should go run to your local Knesset member and tell them, you know, that all these stores that want to stay, oh, we have non-Jewish workers over here. Does it make a difference? Stores can't be open on Shabbat. Does it make a difference who's working, Jews or non-Jews? The Arabs who want to sell, people get very upset, Arabs want to sell chametz, and there was the city ordinances wanted to prevent them from selling it this year. Over here, you see black and white over here that they want to live in our midst. They have to accept these laws as well. Now, as I said, this Ibn Ezra should be very surprising to all of you because this is not our orientation, just in case he wanted one more, in Vayikra and Yudzayin, where it spoke about the non-kosher animals, and I already saw that he said about blood and so on, asher yatsut sayid chaya, ka'ayel v'tzvi, o ofa sheyochal gam mizeh katuv, nomad shelo na'azov hager sheyochal ba'artzenu chazir osus, o of deres shehutameh. But you have to make sure that the non-Jews who live in our midst are not eating things which are inappropriate to eat. Which means you can't say, oh, you can sell pigs in the land of Israel, but the non-Jews can eat it. It says, no, they can't eat this as well. And it continues in the next pasuk. Damo b'nafsho, v'im ta'an ta'en v'lo akatuv amar l'ger asher b'sharecha t'nev ochla. But it says there's certain things that you can give to the ger. Hatshuva ki ze ger tosha, v'chen katuv ager agar b'tochachem. Lo na'azvanu sheyachal nevela, rak ha'nachri sheyavo b'sharenu naton otalo v'yochal otal lachutz. He says that who can you give the nevela to? And by the way, this is not necessarily the halacha. For that matter, nothing that he has said so far is the do we see in the halacha. But he says that when it says that you should give the nevela to the non-Jew, so he says that's the non-Jew who's passing through. The one who's passing through, you can give the tourist. You can serve the tourist. But the person who wants to live in our midst, he has to follow all those. Now again, what is the Ibn Ezra really saying over here? The Ibn Ezra is really saying, although he hasn't said it black and white, but what he's really saying is that the land of Israel will not tolerate certain things. It's a din in the Chefza and not in the Gavra. It's a question of the land, and it doesn't make a difference who's here. Of course, you can then ask, how could even somebody passing through? He says, if you want to be a citizen of this land, you want to be a part of this society, you want to live bisha'arenu, you want to live within our midst, then you need to accept these various laws, which all of them, as I said, I think come as a great surprise. But you realize now what the Ibn Ezra is saying. He's saying that this is land-oriented more so than it is person-oriented. Now, the person who actually articulated this more than others, and is much more famous than the Ibn Ezra, is the Ramban. And the Ramban was also in last week's Parsha, which, again, you noticed that's where Ibn Ezra was as well. V'tatameh ha'aretz, the land will become impure. V'efkod ovana aleh v'taki ha'aretz. This is the land cannot tolerate sin, and the land will vomit you out, and so on. Again, the constitution of the land. We always say that Israel doesn't have a constitution. So, it's true, we don't have a constitution in the political sense, but the land of Israel has a very delicate constitution, and that's what it says, it will vomit out various sin. Which means even though the Ramban says kedoshim to you means something else, no, as far as the importance of arayot, he really says that's the main issue. These are laws dependent on the individual. The einan tluyot ba'aretz, and these are not dealing with the land. So again, the Ramban as I said, you know, as we all know, the Ramban is a great, great Talmudist. The Ramban is a great halachist. And the Ramban is very, very smart. But he's also one more thing, at least. And that he's also a Kabbalist. So when it comes to his Kabbalist, when it comes to his halachic analysis, he tells us the obvious. There are certain mitzvot which are dependent on the land of Israel, and there are certain mitzvot which are dependent on individuals. So we would never imagine that certain things, let's say like arayot, you know, illicit sexual relations, that's dependent upon the land of Israel. No, that's not dependent upon the land of Israel. You travel to Guatemala, you can't do these things either. I mean, these things apply all over. So, and the Ramban knows that. He said that very clearly. He just said these things are, what was his language? Ha'arayot chovat haguf. They are the obligation of the person, the body, the individual. The einam tuliot ba'aretz. They're not mitzvot ha'tuliot ba'aretz. If you were to tell me that taking trumot and ma'aser, right, when you grow something, is dependent on the land of Israel, right? It's not on the person, it's on the land. Yes. So therefore something grew. Again, something grew in Brooklyn. I don't know if anything grows in Brooklyn, but something grew in Brooklyn. But does it give fruit? You grew nice tomatoes also. That if something is growing in Brooklyn, you don't have to take trumot and masrot from it. Why? Because this is dependent not on the person, it's dependent on the land. It's it's Jewish owned. No, that doesn't make a difference. And this is something that we all understand. The Ramban says that's obviously the case. But you know that there's going to be a but coming. But the Ramban adds. Now that's where it gets interesting. He says in the third line, source 15, Avosod Hadavar. Now once he tells you Sod Hadavar, this is the mystical understanding of it. Avosod Hadavar, Bikatuv Sha'amar, Bahanchil Elyon Goyim, Bahafritu Bnei Adam, Yitzev Gvulot Amim. He quotes a pasuk at the end of Dvarim. Bahanchil Elyon Goyim, Bahafritu Bnei Adam, Yitzev Gvulot Amim. Ki chilak Hashem amo v'chule, ve'inyan ki Hashem anichmad bara hakol. The reality is that God creates everything. V'sam koach hatachtonim be'elyonim, and things that take place in the lower world have in the upper world some kind of reflection. V'natano kol am va'am ba'artzotam l'goyeim kochav u'mazal yadua ka'asher noda be'itzdayganut. He says that there are certain powers over here. He's using astrology, but he says that the different lands or different nations have different powers which reflect what goes on below. We'll skip to the next paragraph. What he's going to say is that when it comes to all the lands have these powers. When it comes to the land of Israel, there's no other power. It's only God. And that's the verse he was explaining in Dvarim, Chelek Hashem Elokecha. The land of Israel is God's portion. There's no other powers, as it were. Again, these are Kabbalistic concepts. Try not to take them literally and to therefore misunderstand them. In the next paragraph, he writes, Aval Eretz Yisrael, Amtzaot HaYishuv, Hi Nachlat Hashem Miyuchedet Lishmo. Lo Natan Aleha Min HaMalachim, Katsin, Shoter, Umoshal, Bahanchilo, Ota la'amo ha'miyuchad shmo zaro ohavav. V'ze she'amar v'yitim li skula mikol amim ki li kol ha'aretz. V'chtiv v'yitim li la'am v'anochi elachem le'lokim. Lo shityu atem elohim achirim klal. V'ne kidei she'am yoshev ba'artzo b'ktushat ha'arayot uv'rovei ha'mitzvot liyotam l'shmo. V'lachein amar u'shmartim et kol chukotai v'et kol mishpotai v'asitim otam v'lo toki etchem ha'aretz. So now the Ramban over here said many, many things and implied others. One of the things that he applies is that when it comes to prayer outside the land of Israel, it's a long distance call. It needs to, you pray, an angel carries the prayer to Israel and then it can go up. Over here, God is in dominion in the land of Israel. You pray, it's a direct connection to God. God over here micromanages. In other places, there are angels, other forces, and so on. Over here, in the land of Israel, God micromanages. And therefore, he says, is why in this particular land, we have so many more mitzvot. And therefore, he says that there is this additional sensitivity to arayot in this land. Because the land can't tolerate it. Why? Because it's direct. It's more holiness, and he's explaining more holiness as God being directly involved. If we look on the next page, continue in the Ramban, v'nei ha'aretz shehi nachlat Hashem nechbad taki kol mitamei ota v'lo tisbol ovdei avodah zarah megilat ha'aretz. The land, therefore, will vomit out all types of idolatry and sexual sins. V'chein shanu b'sifra v'lo taki ha'aretz etchem Eretz Yisrael einu kishar eretzo. The land of Israel is not like other lands. Einu mekayemet ovrei avera uvisifri ve'ein imo el nechar shalot ye reshut la'echad misarei umot lavo l'shlot behem. That no angels, forces can be in this land. Umeinyan azeh amar b'sifri v'avadatem mehira, and that's why it's in this free, you'll be quickly kicked out. Afa pi sha'ani migale etchem min ha'aretz l'chutz la'aretz hayu mitzunim b'mitzvot kishetichzeru lo yalechem chadashim. And here the Ramban says something which is, as I said, quite well known, sometimes perhaps misunderstood. He says that when you get kicked out of the land of Israel, you still have to keep mitzvot. Why? So that when you come back to the land, it shouldn't seem strange to you. But he could have said, you should keep the mitzvot, because mitzvot are important wherever you live. By the way, for that part, the Ramban was quoting the Sifri. That's not the Ramban. He's quoting the Sifri on that. The Ramban believes that when it comes to living outside the land of Israel, why does a man have to put on tefillin? Because he has an obligation. So it's a din in the Gavra. He has an obligation. In the land of Israel, why does he have to put on tefillin? Because not only does he have an obligation, it's because the land requires it as well. What the Ramban is not saying is that there's no obligations outside the land of Israel. What he's saying is that there is a double obligation in the land of Israel. The land of Israel, not only are we required personally to do mitzvot, the land also requires us to do the mitzvot. And again, that's the more Kabbalistic idea. But then he continues to say that outside the land of Israel, this is where it can get a little confusing, where you can conclude what you want to conclude. V'zui mitzvat Yaakov avinu leveto, l'kol asher imo, b'shat biyatam la'aretz, esriyu et Elohei nechar asher b'tochichem v'itaru. That's why Yaakov tells his household, get rid of idolatry. When does he tell them this? When they're about to cross into the border of Israel. The land of Israel can't tolerate this. Outside of land, he didn't stop them. And he continues to say, that's why Rachel had to die, according to the Ramban, when Yaakov comes back. Because, okay, it's okay to be married to two sisters in Chutz La'aretz, but the land of Israel will not tolerate somebody breaking any of the year I wrote in the land of Israel. Let's take a look where he says that. U'v'zchuto lo yashav v'eretim shtei achayot, v'yayta hanusot v'isura achva. V'nira shenit abra binyamin kodem bo'am bishchem v'lo nagaba be'eretz klal. That it must be that Yaakov never touched her in the land of Israel at all, and therefore so Yaakov should not have broken the rule of being with two sisters. So again, the Ramban goes on to say the land of Israel is this other component. It is this mystical, spiritual component that cannot tolerate sin and requires mitzvot. That seems to be what the Ramban is saying. He says a similar thing in Source 16, which we won't read right now. But the Gra goes further. And this is what I want you to see. The Gra. Right. So what I would say, and I think this is what one people would explain the Ramban, is that when it came to the avot who were not obligated to keep the Torah, there was no obligate. It was before Matan Torah. So before Matan Torah, they didn't have to keep it. And despite all those who say they kept their, so therefore Yaakov had no obligation, but the land of Israel is still the land of Israel. So perhaps. Yeah, perhaps so I'm saying, but that's the direction you have to go. Is that Yaakov was not commanded as such? Let's look at the Gra in source number 17. The first thing I want you to note about the Gra is that he is essentially starting with the citation. Let me just see. Yes, he's starting with the citation of the Ramban, and this is the verse the Ramban quoted. This is where the Ramban started from, even though Ramban was talking about the land cannot tolerate, but he referred to this verse. And you see over here you see the Gemara saying the exact same thing as the Ramban. Every land has its own forces, powers, rules, but not the land of Israel. Kol hadar bechutz la'aretz domi kimisha ein lo eloka. If you live in the outside land of Israel, it's if you don't have a God, because of these other powers, as it were. The fishu tachat hasarim, because it's underneath these other powers. Aval Eretz Yisrael, in shum memshala l'shivim sarim aleh, l'fichach filo goyim hadarim be'eretz Yisrael, tzrichim l'kayim kol hamitzvot. One second. Did you see that black and white, what the Gemara just now said? And therefore, even the non-Jews, the land of Israel is by God. And therefore, even the non-Jews who live in the land of Israel have to keep all of the mitzvot. And this, as I said, is, or should be, perhaps somewhat... The Gemara comes back. The Gemara said this previously in Source 18, the beginning of Sefer Dvarim. Hashem lokeinu dever elena b'chorev le'mor rav lachem shev l'arizeh umbik amchi yisori goyachod ba'aretz. Kishnehem hein biyichud Yisrael ve'eretz Yisrael. Yisrael mishivim umot ve'eretz Yisrael mikol ha'artzot. Ulechein, we're skipping a little bit. Ne'enshu afilu nochrim b'nei shalosh shomru et ha'torah ba'aretz kamo she'ne'emar. And we'll skip a little bit over here. Ulechein enshu akutim shelo yadam mishpat Elohei ha'aretz kamo she'katavnu. V'zeo ma sha'amru kol adar b'chutz la'aretz domer kimi'in le'in lo Eloha. V'gilui shel Torah hu ba'aretz kamo sha'amru avira de Yisrael machkim v'gam menuvar ein asher ela be'eretz Yisrael u'lechein barach yonah, and so on and so forth. There is actually a midrash which says the land, and you'll see how close this midrash is actually to the pshat. This midrash, I believe it's also in the Tanchuma, that says that the non-Jews were expelled because they didn't keep the laws of Nida. See, the laws of Nida, of all things, they were... Yeah, why? Because the laws of Nida are listed within the laws of the Arayot. And what does it say? The land is going to vomit you out. And what does it say? Whoever doesn't keep these laws, I'm going to cut off their soul and so on. Now, when we read those verses, how did you read them? Was it talking... Did it say, the non-Jews did all these things, and therefore I kicked them out. You don't do all these things, or I'm going to kick you out. But it's all... Why did I kick them out? Was that a punishment? That goes back into what I was saying before. Were they expected to do more? They expected to do better. The land can't tolerate this. So it seems to be what the Gemara is saying over here is actually, I know it's very much a surprise, but when you look at the Ibn Ezra and you look at the Ramban, and now you look at the Gemara, what they're saying is that the land of Israel is a holy land. So all of you knew that beforehand. And what did it say in last week's parasha and again in this week's parasha? It's a holy land that can't tolerate certain types of behavior, and if you do these behaviors, you're kicked out. When it says you'll be kicked out, is it only that the Jew will be kicked out? Absolutely not. Actually, that was the introduction. That's why the non-Jews were kicked out. So if the non-Jews don't want to be kicked out of this land, what do they need to do? They need to keep the practices. So therefore, what does the practices mean? So the minimum way to understand that would have been, so don't do all these things which are called a toeva. Don't do all of these incredibly bad behavior. Ibn Ezra then goes a little bit further. He says, no, not just do bad behavior, actually do, you're obligated. Well, it's funny because he says, okay, don't do, what were his examples? Don't do work on Shabbat, don't do work on Yom Kippur. He didn't say make Kiddush, and he didn't say have chont, right? He said, don't do the negative things. He said, don't eat, you know, these kinds of animals. Don't, it was, even if you look at Ibn Ezra in terms of the kiyum, the Shmirat HaMitzvot, it was less. When we read the Ramban, where did we get to from the Ramban? The Ramban is saying is that there's two separate obligations on mitzvot. There's an obligation on individuals to do mitzvot, but what else did we see from the Ramban? That there's also an obligation the land requires the doing of mitzvot. So then when the Gra goes one step further, which all of you can say, that was a huge step that he took, but when the Gra goes one step further and says, therefore, this land requires the performance of mitzvot, and I don't care whether you're Jewish or not Jewish, you need to do these mitzvot. So the truth is, he's not going that much further than Ibn Ezra. As we saw that Ibn Ezra said, to the Ger Tosha, do not eat chametz on Pesach. Do not eat chametz. The land won't allow this. If you say that, then you're much closer to the Ibn Ezra, but and it's much closer to the Pesukim as well. But as I said, once I ascribe the land this mystical or spiritual capability to it, that it's not the biggest jump to say the land simply won't tolerate certain things and it requires other things. And that we saw in the Ramban already. Somebody pointed this Gra out to me and he says, I don't know where the Gra got it from. I said he got it from the Ramban. The Gra is taking the Ramban and just going one step further, because the Ramban already said it. The Ramban already said that that I'm required to do mitzvot wherever I live. But in the land of Israel, it's not just an obligation on the individual. The land requires me to do it also. So if I take the Ibn Ezra and I take the Ramban, I put them together, what I end up with, what the Gra says. And yes, it's very, very surprising that the Gra can say such a thing. But listen, Yom HaTzimut is coming up. I have to say something about the land of Israel.